Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and as you know, it's now or never. As I look, and as a matter of fact, folks, get your pen or pencil out and mark this day on the calendar, because I'm actually going to say I might be wrong. Maybe it is now or never. Maybe it isn't. Maybe we have nothing to worry about. Maybe Biden's not a bad guy. Maybe Biden is really trying to take care of us. Or maybe Trump is really our hero. Maybe Trump is out there doing really everything for us and nothing for him. And or maybe Snowden's a hero because, I mean, he pointed out the fact that our government was spying on us. And maybe Assange, he's a hero too. He's a national hero in proving how governments spy on each other and what they do. Actually, see, Assange actually covers a broader range. And forgive me for the sardonic tone and the and especially forgive me for the arrogance, because I don't believe I know more than anybody. I believe if I can find the information, then you should be able to find the information. And it's interesting how I have found information that instantly or quickly over time has gotten scrubbed. I remember, as a matter of fact, sometimes information's come to me over the radio. I remember one time, I'll give you this example. One time I was driving home, and this was in the 90s when Clinton was in office, and this is when we bombed the Chinese embassy. Now, one has to scratch their head. Why did we do that? And I believe it was because Clinton was playing hardball with the Chinese. Look at what he was getting from the Chinese. He was getting money so that they could get technology. And I think Clinton kind of sent a message to say, look, you know, we can do these things where you can't, and you need our technology. Because this was during and in the midst of the Kosovo fiasco, where they were trying to find the genocide and all of that. And I know everybody believes that they've gotten, you know, the evidence and so forth. But if that was the case, was it Milosevic or whatever the guy's name was? Because I laughed at people that quasi-conservative. There's this one guy that used to tell me what a conservative he was, a real champion of the Republican cause. And he his hero was John McCain, the Maverick. And so that's how he was trying to model himself. Like, I was dumb enough to believe this guy. And he actually worked in a, and believe it or not, there are people like that that work in a classified environment. And I do know that there are good people in a classified environment and there are bad people. Shoot, when I deployed overseas and I was a part of the intel section, I was absolutely shocked. I was absolutely shocked how every person in the entire intel section had compromised themselves when they went to the Philippines and so forth and so on. I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. Now, I don't have evidence, but they placed themselves at least in situations where they could have been compromised. And I have a greater belief that they were than they weren't, because it seemed like, and what was really evident, and it was kind of, I guess, apropos for behavior of guys when they got to the Philippines after they came, you know, because we went to the Philippines 3, 4, 5 times on a pump. And a pump is a 6-month, you know, tour or float over in the Western Pacific. So anyway, when we would go back, these guys would hook up with the same gals. In other words, they didn't like the bar girls didn't like, you know, guys hopping around. They were looking for a sugar daddy. And so, I mean, and this was the type of game that they played. But my problem is that I do know that people are easily compromised if you don't have any type of convictions, if you don't have any – I'll just say, moral fortitude to be able, and we all have our weaknesses, and I'm not here to, you know, point out theirs are worse than mine. But the fact of the matter is that if we truly believe, we won't put ourselves, because we got to avoid, and as a matter of fact, I had this great conversation with Woody, that we really do need to be in a position where we avoid those types of things. Now, sometimes we get galvanized. There's certain things that I think we can develop that, you know, we can. It's not that we're not tried every time, but it becomes second nature. This is where we need to be in discipline, spiritually, mentally, morally, you know, constitutionally. We need to be disciplined so that it just becomes second nature that we do the right thing. And it makes it easy to do the right thing. If you have to weigh and you have to literally consider whether you do the right thing or do something different that's not the right thing, well, what does that mean? It's the wrong thing. Anyway, you know, how we justify, you know, doing something different, because then we're not saying we're doing the wrong thing. We're just doing something different. people are amazing. We are amazing how we can just mentally, logically, morally justify the directions and the paths that we go. But anyway, today's Feedback Friday, and I've got a lot that I want to kind of cover, and I don't have anything necessarily in a blazing order, because over this past week, I have been pulled, and folks, there is a lot of great conservatives out there, and they're getting information. You're receiving information that is framed in the wrong context. Now, I guess one of the first things I should do, you know, or address is the 14th Amendment. Now, I have no problem being out on this limb all by myself in telling you that I see the divine hand of providence DNA in that amendment. Now, I do believe that he works miracles, and I do believe he knew the one thing we needed was the mechanism of holding our public servants accountable. But the other thing that is amazing, and I kind of pointed this out in a conversation just, I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before. And if you really look, the fourth section of the 14th Amendment made it clear why we ended up taking the turn that we did. Because at that point, after the 14th Amendment was ratified, and it was ratified, folks, I have a firm conviction that I know it was ratified, and I believe it was the straw that broke the camel's back of Britain. It was the thing. See, Britain thought that they could, you know, because they had spies in America. They were working in America, and there were a lot of spies and a lot of people working in the southern states as let's just say advisors or corruptors that were offering money to the states and to the Confederacy to help them sever their relationship, because they saw that as this nation was divided over slavery, because this literally was the issue. The North was wrong. The South should have seceded. And the North, this is really what should have happened, because I've gone through this in my head so many times that if you've got a different theory, by all means, I'd love to hear it, because I'd love to go through all of the different factors that laid out. And this is how I believe Lincoln was very special. He had a very special purpose in this republic. He wasn't a constitutionalist. As a matter of fact, I think he was pretty constitutionally illiterate. And I think that he didn't understand the same principles that the framers did. As a matter of fact, if you think Lincoln was a champion for the blacks and for freeing the blacks, going into his administration, as he was basically debating in the Douglas debates, anybody that holds the Douglas debates and reveres Lincoln as what he said, as any black person in America that holds those debates and says, Lincoln is my man, then they haven't read those debates. Because Lincoln comes right out and says how inferior blacks were, that they shouldn't be free. And this is why there's evidence before he became president that go out there. You'll actually find an amendment to the Constitution that would have galvanized slavery. He promised the South that they wouldn't secede, that they could maintain slavery. And the South just said, nope, we don't trust you. You know, you've been stringing us along and stringing us along. Because really, the South used, in the weirdest ways, the South created an alliance with the Hamiltonian Federalists that they knew that they needed to maintain slavery as a... And I don't think they understood that it was the divisive nature that they were clinging on to that was giving them energy. It was giving them energy at that point in time because right after the Constitution, America was primarily what? Primarily agrarian. And so the agrarian states needed to cling on to slavery. And so as the northern states, and this is how Hamilton was playing both sides of this. Hamilton was a huge advocate for industry and factories and bringing in, you know, that type of revolution in America's economy. And so what we'll have to do is we'll have to pick this up again because I want to get back to the 14th Amendment because I've gone down this little story of history of how this all got laid out. But bottom line is, I want to show to you as we look at Section 4, and I'm trying to set the stage on this, of why it is so important, why the 14th Amendment has to be downtrodden, and we'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so as I was just saying, when we look at what Hamilton was doing, he was actually bringing together the Southern lawyers and those types of leaders within the states because he understood that government was... What runs government? The people, nine times out of ten, and at that point in time, those who were working the law, lawyers, those who were in the legal system were the ones that were thinking of the laws, figuring out how to create traps in laws. I mean, this is why lawyers have such a bad reputation, even in Christ's time. So when we understand what Hamilton was doing, he was laying out this webwork where there was this tie between the South and the North. And what ended up happening is the South kept on gaining advantage and advantage up until 1820s, when they created the gag order. And the North, at that point, they really saw, well, actually, the Missouri Compromise and the gag order were like the, there's a word for, you know, the grand gesture that really changed the hearts and minds of the North. And this is when John Quincy Adams was ran out of office and watched basically Andrew Jackson and Van Buren, Martin Van Buren, there's the name, Martin Van Buren, in getting into the presidency and creating the gag rule in the Senate. And this is when John Quincy Adams dedicated the rest of his life to become an abolitionist fighting slavery in the U.S. Senate. And so they started bringing in and becoming more aggressive in creating factories in the Northeast. And they started growing the United States on the northern seaboard and going across to increase the population. Watch the population across the United States every 10 years and how it was distributed across the states. You could easily see how the House of Representatives was going to become very dominant towards the North, and you were going to see how the states, until the Missouri Compromise, was going to be equally dominant on the anti-slavery issue. Because it wasn't until all of the new states coming into the Union that were going to be across the Mason-Dixon line, those had to become slave states, which was repugnant. And it was driving, it was forcing all these new states in the Union to actually become slave states. And so many of these states, you know, when the Dred Scott case came up, that was absolute proof that Missouri really wasn't a, you know, a hardcore slave state. It was only a slave state to benefit the very few elite people that wanted to have the control, free labor control, over their agrarian endeavors. And so, because it wasn't like they were creating factories. So anyway, as we look at the Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, it's at the tip of my tongue, I can't say the expression, but the one thing that really galvanized the 14th Amendment as a bad amendment to those who wanted to undermine the United States. Remember, these are foreigners. Foreigners that were here among us, that were doing everything they could, because Britain never liked, they never wanted to swallow. And today, if you know any British person that is a good friend, because I've actually had friends in California that were, they were U.S. citizens, but they were still British, and they didn't celebrate the 4th of July. They've always felt, you know, it rubbed them in their craw. Look at Britain today. Britain, you would think Britain is strictly that little island or that clump of islands in the North Atlantic. No. Britain is a commonwealth, and Canada is a part of that commonwealth. India was a part of that commonwealth. Australia is a part of that commonwealth, and many of the African states were a part of that commonwealth. And as a matter of fact, they allowed all of these states to have autonomy, but they still pay Britain their pound of flesh every year, because they're a part of the Commonwealth. And so Britain didn't like the fact that we upset their little empire. And so they basically were working here left and right and ardently trying to get back underneath, you know, America, to divide us, to conquer us, somehow to pull us back. And so they were waiting and waiting for the opportunity. Well, the Civil War came along, and it was the perfect opportunity, because now they had this divisive nature, and they got the South deeply in debt, and they were providing them arms and all sorts of nice stuff so that they could defend themselves against the North. And it was interesting that they were very well at doing that, it looked like the South was going to win until Lincoln finally changed his heart, prostrated himself, and actually changed the tone and tenor of the Civil War to be about slavery instead of about this ludicrous idea that the Southern states are no, that a state that calls out violations of the Constitution cannot secede. You've heard me say this time and time again. Madison was saying this in the 30s, in the 1830s, that if a state felt that the Constitution was being violated, they had a right to secede. Which, who do you think understands the Constitution better, Lincoln or Madison? Fact is, folks, when we look at states today, California wants to secede, and they're not claiming that they want to secede because the United States is violating the Constitution. They're seceding because the United States is the United States and not willing to violate the Constitution enough and put the Constitution aside and create, you know, these new morphed New World Order nations that benefit the globalists. And they're playing this divisive agenda in California and in many of these others. That's what Satan does, divide and conquer. So anyway, the fourth section was the coup d'etat, and it was basically laying down, that was the word, it was basically laying down a gauntlet that said that the United States, this became the supreme law of the land, that the United States was not accountable to any insurrection costs of prosecuting their war. Now, see, why did the Southern states want to come into the Union quickly after the Civil War? Because they lost and they owed a whole bunch of money. And the last thing they wanted to do was be out there flailing as this failed, defunct Confederacy, because the Confederacy was beaten. And so now they were all autonomous little states. The Confederacy was broken up. And now we had these independent sovereign states that owed these other nations a lot of money. And so when they entered that fourth section into the 14th Amendment, the whole globalist hated it. And as a matter of fact, the lawyers hated it because they were all a part of the globalists. So when you start looking at where everybody's loyalty lied at that point in time, those people who believed in individual liberty and individual sovereignty and the spirit of our Constitution and the spirit of our Declaration and the spirit of this union, of why these states came together so that all men could be free, that all men would be able to have their own self-destiny. When you look at that 14th Amendment and you look at Section 1 and what it does, and when you look at Section 2, and we're going to go through the 14th Amendment in more detail later, but when you look at all of these things, what it does is it guarantees that the states can no longer take away any privilege or immunity that is guaranteed by that Constitution. Now, most people look at the 14th Amendment and go, oh, that means the states, you know, the federal government can do anything. No, the federal government can't get involved in education. So when the 14th Amendment was claimed to be used as a mechanism to reach into Brown v. Educated, the Board of Education, then Thurgood Marshall was absolutely wrong. He was lying, he was violating the Constitution, and he overreached into jurisdiction they didn't have. Same thing with abortion, all of these things. You got to remember that the 14th Amendment went sideways, or I should say the federal government sideways after the 14th Amendment in so many different ways, from the Organic Act, from Jim Crow laws, and so forth. And that's because I believe when you look at these guys that were called the Radical Republicans, they were the sanity in chaos at that point in time that were brought together in 1866. I have an article that you should read. This is an article that was written by, not by me, but by Kurt Lash, that really, in the introduction of part three of this long article that he wrote regarding the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment, it is very clear that the whole tone of the 14th Amendment was to protect not just blacks, but all people, that all people had a right of protection, or I should say, all U.S. citizens had a right. All people living within the United States that were citizens were guaranteed these privileges and immunities, because that's exactly what it says, that no state can make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges or immunities of not all people, not foreigners, all U.S. citizens. And so that's why the very first part of Section 1 made all blacks, all people that were born here under the jurisdiction of the United States. Were slaves under the jurisdiction? Absolutely they were. They were allocated three-fifths. And this is, you know, this is how God did this. They were allocated three-fifths of apportionment right there within the Constitution. They were under the U.S. jurisdiction. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Show me in the Constitution where there are actual teeth, consequences to public servants violating their oath of office. And when you look at the tone of what Section 3 really says, because there are many people out there that are soothsayers that will tell you, oh, well, Section 3 doesn't apply to today. It only applied to those people back then. And absolutely not, because if you look at the language of Section 3, the original language, that's exactly how it was applied, that only those people. But this is when Howard, Senator Howard of the Senate, actually came right out and said, look, when somebody violates their oath of office, they've committed moral perjury. And as far as I'm concerned, they should not be in office. And they went down this whole discussion of making Section 3 something that became a permanent bite, a permanent enforcement of the oath of office. And in essence, one of the things that they didn't really cover that I believe this actually replaces impeachment for a person failing to support their oath of office. In other words, it doesn't get rid of the impeachment process, because a person can be impeached because of their moral character, because of their bad behavior. They're just so repugnant that they can be impeached because of that behavior. Like Bill Clinton. You know, Bill Clinton could have been impeached, but he actually should have been tried for treason instead. He should have been brought up, and as a matter of fact, it was presented in 1996 prior to the election with the guys' names were Curry and Winterm, these two men from, they were reporters from MSNBC that gave the whole timeline of how Clinton would be getting money from China and providing a favor back to China, like allowing that hard drive out of Los Alamos to actually disappear and end up in China by giving China the Loral guidance technology so that actually China could have a successful missile and space program in being able to target the United States with ICBMs. Oh, isn't that nice? So when we start looking at everything Clinton was doing and building up to 1996 for his reelection, he was selling America outright. This is why this man should have been charged for treason. And you know what? if you ever saw him get upset at how he got impeached and how he held the media accountable, boy, I'll tell you what, if I'm the only one that actually gets this movement of saying Clinton should be tried for treason because of what he did, not because of Monica Lewinsky, because that was the lesser charge. Why did Congress go after him over perjury instead of the clear evidence that they had? They had evidence. It was presented to them by these two journalists, just like Watergate. Why did Watergate bubble up to such a level? Ah, so you got to understand, Nixon wasn't a real Republican. He wasn't a constitutionalist. He was a globalist. Nixon was the globalist opposing John F. Kennedy. The only reason Nixon became a Republican was because he knew he wouldn't be able to beat out John F. Kennedy for the president run back in the 50s. And so, or actually in 1960, but building up to in the 50s and the election of 1960. So this is why Nixon became the Republican. When we look at what we see, things aren't necessarily black and white. Just because somebody has an R next to their name does not make them a true constitutionalist or a good guy. I mean, they literally are changing hats and they're doing whatever is necessary to advance the globalist agenda. And the globalist agenda has always been, as Washington warned us, to destroy this union. And so they had to incrementally, because we were so tight, this Constitution created such a strong government that it's taken them 200 years, and it's not through democracy that we've destroyed ourselves. It's from within. It's from all of these different things that they've created, and all of these things are a facade. And here's the beautiful thing, folks. As we look at the awful state that this nation is in, that, you know, we've got, or this is the paradigm. In other words, the wizards or the soothsayers that have cast this spell upon America is trying to convince you that this debt is insurmountable, that all of these problems, that the government's control, all of these things are reality and there's nothing we can do. And this is why so many people are so appealed to a sovereign citizen movement and the lies of saying, all you've got to do is claim yourself as an adult, and all you've got to do is claim yourself as a sovereign, and deny your U.S. citizenship. Now, I'm not sure how you feel about the concept of, you know, Christianity, but there are many things that could easily come out. And prove Christianity, and there, and somebody could, you know, make with every faith out there, you know, by the bad behavior of individuals, prove or at least cast a light to make you doubt your Christianity, your ability of Christianity to say, to a point where you go, I believe in Christ, and what I see in all of this is not Christ. This is what I see as Christ. I am going to now sever myself from Christianity. To, you know, in the thought of becoming a better Christian. But, you won't call yourself a Christian. You'll have to be something different. But the point is, that's Satan. That's Satan working in getting you to actually denounce your birthright. And, folks, when you have a birthright in the nation that was created by him, our creator, the divine hand of providence, and you denounce your birthright, who do you think wins? Do you actually win? Or have you put yourself in jeopardy? As a non-citizen now, you are no longer a U.S. citizen. What rights do you have? You can't petition government for the redress of grievances. That is only reserved as a privilege and immunity granted to U.S. citizens. Look at what you're doing if you're walking down this road. And I know a lot of people, when they hear this, it goes against what they've been taught. And they're believing that the Magna Carta required that we had to give up our citizenship. Folks, anytime anybody points to old laws of the Magna Carta and those types of things, they are not applicable under this government. We all became sovereign citizens and partakers in this self-governing system called our Constitution. As a part of the immune system of being able to quickly clarify and purify our government, because we have a contract. We have an enumerated contract that limits the authority of our government to those very specific things. The reason why our state constitutions are very problematic is because our state constitutions have been modified by the federal government, because the federal government has given us mandates that have all been unconstitutional. Now, I haven't even gone into this... this diatribe on Snowden. But the fact of the matter is, I want you to actually look. We'll go into the word for word, line for line later on. We'll probably do this next year, because there's just a lot of stuff that we need to cover this year. And shoot, yesterday, I had a snowstorm, and then Wednesday was, Pearl Harbor Day, and all of these things that I could actually spend time historically on Pearl Harbor Day on Wednesday. But this content is more important. And Feedback Friday is the mechanism I use to kind of help put out the fires that are burning our feet. And what I mean by this is there's plenty of people that are hearing more and more about this concept of committees of safety, the concept of these assemblies of safety, these concepts that are a part of the pre-government when we were British citizens. And, because of this, we have to do these things. No, all of that got wiped away when we created this new government under the U.S. Constitution. Under the U.S. Constitution, or the Constitution for the United States, however you want to call it, under that organic constitution, we created a union where all people were sovereign citizens, that when you became an adult, you became a sovereign citizen. You were now accountable fully to the full extent of the law. You were responsible as a citizen to bear your part. You have a responsibility to protect and defend the Constitution. And your state government has the authority to come and knock on your door and demand that you come with them to defend the Constitution. The problem is that what we have is our government has been co-opted by evildoers, and they're getting you to attack or ignore the attack on our Constitution. This is why citizens need to start creating unorganized militias and citizen vigilant organizations in your county. This is why we've been going through this week. And we'll go through the rest of this next week. And then we're going to go through the issues of what are the issues that you need to start making hay about in your constitutional campaign. I don't think I could do any better in tying this stuff together. But I'm trying to help you understand that what we do moving forward is critical as to whether we will succeed or not. It's that simple. And getting this, when I said the Lord gave us a constitution that can quickly purify our problems, it is that simple. You just have to understand the enumerated constitution concept. We'll be right back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solution for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I'm hoping that you take the time, and I'm hoping that you actually look into and read the 14th Amendment. I know the language, you know, it's over 100 years ago, and our language has evolved since then. But there are some things that the words mean the same things, like ratification means the same thing. And when you read that, I would highly, highly advise, if you really want to understand the 14th Amendment, or better yet, you want to challenge the 14th Amendment, you want to come along and say it means something different, before you can do that, because there's plenty of people that came along after the 14th Amendment and said, oh, well, this is what it means, and this is what it did, and absolutely a lie. Absolutely a lie. Because the only way you can determine what the Constitution means and does, what the 14th Amendment means and does, is by reading the debates in the Congressional Globe. Now, that's a lot of stuff. And, oh, by the way, it's not that simple. What you need to do, sorry, I had to take a drink. What you need to do is you need to highlight those who are proponents for the 14th Amendment and those who were opponents. In other words, those who were trying to get it to fail. If you don't understand the difference, you might read words of an opponent that comes up and says, well, this seems like it's pretty good, but what about this or what about this? Or in the way they present it, you might not be able to tell if they were pro or con. So you have to understand by highlighting, literally by highlighting the text with red and green, you need to go through this. This is why I have asked, and a good friend of mine who I believe is listening, told me that they were going to scan the 14th Amendment and put it into text, into a Word document. This way, you can actually prove and go through this and find anything that you find. So this is what you need to do, by the way. If you don't believe in the work of somebody else, because I have the ratification debates, and I give them to people, and you read the highlighted sections that I use for citations, all you've got to do to prove that I have done something nefarious and change the wording is go to the doggone document yourself and verify if that is the precise wording. If it is, then no harm, no foul. You have an accurate citation that provides perfect truth and clarity on the matter you're looking into. When it comes down to, you know, a punctuation change or something like that, then one must be suspicious. There, you know, all the other citations, did it really change the context? No, it didn't change the context. Something was off. Because I can tell you, you can go to the Avalon Project, Article 4, read the Constitution, and then read what they have as the Constitution. I think there's a typo, or I think there's some stuff missing. And this was pointed out by somebody. It was a long time ago, and I try not to bother myself with that. But the fact of the matter is when we start reading things, it's important to get it right. And it's important to understand what it really means before you, as far as the source document, be square on the source document before you start leaping forward. Because all the rest of these, you know, little changes here and there, they're just nuances. When I read the Constitution, I read the actual Constitution, a document that I have pulled, that I got actually from John Rowland from the Constitution Society. And it's actually, I think he still has the document out there, his old document of back in his day, what parts of the Constitution was being violated. It's all being violated practically now. And there's parts of it that he doesn't even highlight as being violated. That I go, you know, how did you miss this, John? But anyway, you know, and that just shows you that even for constitutionalists of the, and his era was the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I mean, I think he was a attorney general for the state of Texas back in possibly the 80s or the 90s. That was his day. And so, and God bless this guy's soul for everything he's done. But the fact of the matter is as he went through the ratification debates, he actually has them up there, but I'm not sure he's read them. He possibly has, but based on all of the other information that he's had and all the other stuff that he's done, you know, it kind of, it clouds us. We all become more and more clouded as more and more information gets crammed into our minds and into our brains and into our life. And we develop biases unless you're predisposed to always challenge everything and say, this doesn't necessarily fit. And as a matter of fact, the oath of office and the petition, as you look at the petition of government for the redress of grievances, what that means is petitioning your public servants for failing to fulfill their oath of office or violating their oath of office, because government itself does what it's told. Let's look at government as a machine. It's like a computer. Bad input in, bad output out. And so when we look at government, it is being driven by this energy of either compliance or non-compliance and a mixture thereof. We have slowly gone from a body of public servants who were in full compliance to a body of governance of people who are not complying to the Constitution. They have accepted the process. They have accepted how to vote, the authority and jurisdiction of the federal government. Why is it that we have anybody in Congress that is members of committees that are unconstitutional? The committees that Congress has, almost all of them, are unconstitutional. So where's the moral character of these senators and of these a senator has a six-year shot of being able to go in and say, I refuse to be on a committee that is unconstitutional and not be on that committee. And let everybody in the world know that all of these committees and going and listing them and saying, this Power, Ways, and Means Committee, this is unconstitutional. The jurisdiction and the overreach that this committee is doing is unacceptable. And start going through every single committee. Do you really believe that the federal government has the jurisdiction over Major League Baseball and steroid use? Do you really believe that? Because it's not in the Constitution. So how in the heck is it that they're doing this crap? Ah, It's because we're allowing them to do it. And this is why when John allows John Roland and his group and his ilk, or the people that are of his generation, it's just like Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College teaches you the Constitution, but fails to actually show the definitive enumerated powers and say all of these things are unconstitutional. They have accepted unconstitutional government. So why would you take a course? Why would you even waste your time learning I'll just call it a New Age version of the Constitution? You have to read it. You have to read the ratification debates, and that is the Constitution and how it's defined. That's simple. It is. I hate to say it. I hate to marginalize the simplicity of all of this. And I'm really sorry that I didn't get into Snowden this time, because the evidence is so overwhelming. I just challenge anybody that wants to basically make a quip. Oh, Snowden's a hero. That person is an idiot that doesn't know anything, that is basically just sucking the... So this is where people become conflicted between the progressive narrative, because it is a progressive ideology that believes that somebody that actually defied our national security for their own benefit is a hero in any way. There's no way that man had any righteous intent. He did everything to aggrandize himself. And if you just do the due diligence, look at when he started collecting intelligent information and holding it so that he could finally divulge all of this stuff. If you look at the timelines of when he had access to that type of information and what he was doing in his jobs, in these different jobs that he held, you will see that his statement that all of a sudden he felt that the Constitution was being violated and he needed to, bring this to light. Then why was he collecting intelligence and having classified material in his possession for a long period of time? Why? Because he was planning on being a snitch. This guy is if you understand a narcissist, this guy really built himself on a reputation that he can't defend. And there's many people out there that are out there calling him a hero, and they can't defend that either. These are sad days. These are sad days when we look at Judases that are actually heroes. So we'll get into the details of the intelligence system maybe in our next Feedback Friday. But when we come back next week, we're going to be taking right back where we left off in how do you create a constitutional county? How do you actually become a leader and help other people lead with you? We don't need one leader per county. We need a host of leaders, because your county needs to sit and represent yourself up at the state legislature. You need sheriffs in your county. You need legislators in your county, and so forth and so on. So there's plenty of opportunity to everybody to lead one way or the other. Folks, let's find our niche and let's find our path. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.